Las Vegas Review-Journal endorsed Donald Trump on Saturday. It's the biggest local paper so far to declare support for the GOP nominee. Worth noting, the paper is owned by billionaire GOP mega-donor Sheldon Adelson, who also personally endorsed the Republican nominee earlier this year.
If I had to pick one word to me that summed up Obamacare, it would be quantity. More people have insurance now than before when the law was passed. That's true. Here's the problem. What has been the result for millions of hardworking Americans? Higher premiums.
TD Ameritrade and TD Bank teaming up to buy Scott Trade Financial for $4 billion, combining two of the biggest discount stock brokers in the U.S., and aircraft parts suppliers Rockwell Collins and BE Aerospace joining forces in a more than $6 billion tie-up, all part of more than $100 billion in deals to kick off the week.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10. Today is Tuesday. It is October 25th, 2016. Good morning and welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell, and welcome to another business day. Lots going on in Chicago. World Series game day number one in Cleveland. Everybody's psyched about that. Lots of business news happening as well. Later in this program, we're going to be talking a little bit about sex health as well, which college campuses are doing the best jobs of it in the country. There's a new survey out, and we're going to be talking a little bit about automated cars as well, and whether or not Apple is going to still be in that area. But first, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk numbers this morning. Dow futures are pointing towards tepid gains later this morning when the opening bell rings, up 15 points right now. The S&P and NASDAQ futures are just a little bit higher as well. Crude oil is trading up this morning as well, $50.79 a barrel. Around the globe this morning, markets are mixed. In Europe, the FTSE in London is up, the DAX in Germany up, CAC in France is up as well. Asian markets are also mixed this morning. A couple of stories making news since you went to bed last night, since you've been up this morning, includes this overhaul you heard there in the opening montage of sound bites. The House Speaker talking about Obamacare, a premiums going up sharply next year for health insurance sold to millions of consumers through healthcare.gov. Before taxpayer-provided subsidies, premiums for mid-level benchmark plan will increase an average of 25% across states served by the federally funded run online market. The number of insurers serving the market will drop from 232 to 167, a loss of about 28%. Certainly, it has its problems, and we'll be discussing that with your money throughout the morning here on 720 WGN. Also, some news today about pickup trucks scoring poorly in headlight tests performed by the insurance industry. The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety Test measured how far light carries from the truck's high beams and low beams. They also measured the amount of glare that could affect oncoming drivers. The Institute tested 23 headlight combinations available on 11 small and full-size car pickups. Most of the headlights caused excessive glare. You've probably seen that when you've been on the road at night driving around. Also, Consumer Reports is out with its best of the year, the annual survey of the best and worst cars. They put that out. You can check Consumer Reports' website for the full list. But the uptake from that is that new cars, well, they're not as reliable as they used to be. And Consumer Reports says you can almost expect to have problems with your new car because of just all kinds of different problems. We'll focus on that a little later. And then also today, we're hearing that Apple is probably abandoning its efforts to do its electric car. But is it getting out of the business altogether? That leads off our business discussion this morning. Let's bring in Dale Buss, who's a writer for Brand Channel and others as well. But his story appears in Brand Channel today. Dale, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve.
Glad to have you back. This is important news. It was first sort of rumored, I guess, last week maybe, that this was happening. Is Apple getting out of the automated car, electric car business?
Well, Bloomberg did a story on pretty strong evidence, they're not getting out of the car business, but what they're doing is the whole fear in the auto industry about Apple was that here this biggest capitalized company in the world you know, the leader in industrial design, arguably in consumer design. All the mystique of Apple was going to come to bear on the auto industry, and Apple was going to design an electric and self-driven automobile that, you know, was going to come in and have a huge impact on the industry. I mean, you know, maybe make what Tesla has done look like peanuts. But what's happened is Apple has decided to pull back. I mean, they haven't done anything official. That's the Apple way, pretty much, try to control the information. But it seems what happened is that they have begun cutting hundreds of jobs from their team that was supposed to put together this complete automobile called Project Titan. They had about 1,000 people out in Silicon Valley working on this, and they're redeploying resources away from the automotive effort. They're taking hardware and software engineers, sticking them elsewhere. They're doing other things, and basically, Apple has concluded that we're not going to do our own complete car. We are going to have maybe a self-driving platform that we design that maybe we can work with other automakers or other tech companies on. But in some ways, even for Apple, the auto business is proving too difficult, too daunting, maybe, you know, unexpected to them in lots of ways.
We're going to continue our conversation with Dale Puss this morning about this and talk about where Apple might be redeploying these resources and whether or not we might still see them in this space. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, some stocks of local interest that we're watching this morning, a couple of them popping. Boeing is up almost 1.5% this morning. Baxter International doing well this morning. One of the big decliners appears to be UAL Corporation, off almost 0.5%. It's 5:19.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, some corporate horse trading over the weekend encouraged investors to buy yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 77 points to 18,223. The S&P 500 rose 10 points, and thanks to big gains for tech companies, the NASDAQ Composite climbed 52.5. Time Warner shares fell more than 3% to close at $86.74, well below the $107.50 offered by AT&T. It's a sign of Wall Street's concern over whether the proposed $85 billion merger will pass regulatory muster. Restaurant Brands International, owner of Burger King and Tim Horton, reported a rise in third quarter sales, but growth was lower than a year ago, especially in the U.S. Analysts say cheaper groceries have Americans cooking at home and going out less. For the fourth straight year, Lexus tops Consumer Reports survey of most reliable cars. The Toyota Prius came in second. The list is closely watched by the industry as many buyers look to the magazine for advice when shopping for a new vehicle. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're talking this morning about Apple's foray or not into the electric car area with something called Project Titan. Dale Buss is with us this morning from the Detroit area, this morning from the motor area of the U.S. Dale, the Project Titan has been very secretive. We haven't really seen much out of that. Do you think that was sort of a sign that things were not going well?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you know, Apple's culture is to keep things close to the vest and then release news or, in dribs and drabs, I guess, to try and get people excited about it. But I think, you know, part of it was probably that Apple executives recognized the enormity of what it was they were about to take on with Project Titan, entering an entire new industry with entirely different supply chains, an industry that relies on locomotion, not just, bytes and bits, industry where manufacturing of massive machines has taken decades to perfect. They realized early on that, you know, this is a pretty daunting prospect, but this is Apple and we can do it. And what they came to realize, however, and why Project Titan has been severely curtailed is that, you know, supply chains are different in the auto industry. Suppliers aren't the same people that Apple is used to working with around the world. And even with Apple, suppliers are like, well, how many cars are you going to start out making? You know, what do we have to do to get our own machine tools and processes and design people fired up to work with an Apple car? How many are you going to make? And this whole notion of putting a car together rather than just a small piece of electronics was something that apparently has kind of overwhelmed Apple, and they've realized that it is not as simple as Apple had thought, that it's not just a matter of what you can do in Silicon Valley, but also what you can do in a manufacturing plant that may be located, you know, elsewhere in the country, and simply kind of ran into the obstacles that the automotive industry has encountered over the decades and perfected into what the industry is today. And it's just interesting, and you have to sort of rank it as a victory for the traditional auto industry that Apple has been kind of thwarted by what has run up against. Because for years now, we've gotten used to hearing reports about the future of the industry moving to Silicon Valley, and even automakers themselves have engaged in a hiring spree in Silicon Valley to get people on board to help them with things like ride-sharing, mobility services, and self-driving. Here's a bit of a reversal, it seems.
If the reports are to be believed, and again, you say Apple has not said anything officially about this, but it seems like they're still trying to develop some sort of autonomous driving platform, what would that be?
Well, that would be something that is much more comfortable for Apple, because it's basically bolt-on software that they're working on. You know, just like Google, like Uber, like many other companies, they're trying to figure out, you know, what would be the brains behind a truly self-driven car. And, you know, Apple would be very good at integrating a software platform with some automakers or some other company's actual physical mechanical car. That's something they know they can do, and so they've scaled back to deciding within the next year or so whether even that is something that they actually want to do. But that seems like much more easily within Apple's capabilities and wouldn't require, you know, the kind of massive investment and mind shift that it takes to compete, you know, with traditional auto companies in building a car.
You know, and as I read all of your work in this, Dale, I'm left with one question, and it makes me think about Tesla. If Apple felt like it couldn't do this, and by this I mean do the full car, what does it say about the struggles that maybe Tesla is going through?
Well, it's interesting because Tesla has, you know, perhaps it's a reflection of the personality of Elon Musk as CEO, but they've looked at this very same challenge, putting together a complete car from the ground up, and said, heck, we can do that. You know, let's plunge in. And they've done it. But what's interesting about Tesla is the point to which they've gotten is remarkable and, you know, a huge achievement really in the history of industry. But to get to the next stage that Tesla wants to get to, which is true mass production of automobiles in the hundreds of thousands a year, which is what they're aiming to do in the next year or so, you know, that's what's going to require a huge leap forward, and that could be a challenge that will trip up Tesla in the sense that they're trying to ramp up to hundreds of thousands of vehicles from just tens of thousands, you know, more quickly than any company has ever done in history. So that'll be worth watching as well, for sure.
Well, and there's also a lot of new techs and engineers out on the job market. Is that going to be beneficial for Detroit to maybe gobble up some of those people?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. At the time that this is happening with Apple, Ford, for example, is planning to double its staff in Silicon Valley, you know, into the hundreds, and certainly would be interested in picking up some of those people. I'm sure those folks won't be on the market for long, given you know, all the efforts that automakers, Google, Uber, other companies are still making, you know, in the automotive space.
Dale Buss is a writer for several different publications. Brand Channel is one of them, brandchannel.com, where you can read his latest on the Apple self-driving car and Project Titan. Dale, good of you to be with us, as always, here on The Opening Bell.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
From ABC News, Tech Trends. Did your connected toaster spearhead a takedown of the web? A massive cyber attack last week took down popular sites like Amazon and Twitter.
And what's interesting, they targeted a switchboard of the internet, a company called Dyn. It directs web traffic. So when it goes down, PayPal, Netflix, Spotify, some of the big boys online really are affected.
It's the kind of attack that experts call a DDoS, or disrupted denial of service. To execute the attack, hackers were able to harness everyday internet-connected devices to create an outage. But ABC's Becky Worley says this isn't about users picking tougher passwords for their devices or accounts.
These are appliance-like devices in our homes, many of which were not built to be secure citizens of the Internet. Manufacturers need to take care of this with security patches.
Those patches can't come soon enough, Worley says. All connected devices open your home up to hacking, including smart appliances, set-top boxes, and security cameras. With Tech Trends, I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program at 5:37. We're going to be talking a little bit about the business of sex, the business of health this morning, but nothing you need to cover your ears for, your kids' ears for. The University of Georgia has taken home top honors in the 2016 Trojan Sexual Health Report Card. This is an annual ranking by the maker of Trojan, but it involves Sperling's Best Places, a survey that respected area of surveys of the country of good things and places and practices. And we wanted to bring in Bert Sperling this morning on the program to talk a little bit about this. People pay a lot of money to go to college, and if the health aspects of those campuses are not up to snuff, it's probably worth you knowing about it. Bert is with us this morning. Bert, this survey you've been doing now for quite a while, what are the findings? What is the upshot?
Well, Steve, as you might know, that this has been going on for 11 years. And so it's really not only just from year to year, but it is looking at the state of sexual health information in schools over a period of time as well. So what we've been finding is, well, first let me just start by saying what we're looking at. We're looking at the information, resources, services given to students so they can make smart, healthy decisions regarding sexual health. We're not measuring the actual sexual health, like sexual health, say, STDs or STIs or other type of, say, illnesses, but we are looking at the information that's provided. And what we've found, Steve, is that it's increasing all the time, and we like to think of part of it's due to the study that we're doing with the 140 colleges, and it's actually covering about one-third of all the students in four-year four-year colleges around the country. And so anyway, we're seeing an increase in the information and the services that are provided to the students regarding sexual health.
And so what would be among those services and pieces of information? Give us a sense of that.
You bet. What we're looking at is things like the information on the website. And we are measuring, we have a questionnaire that we send out every year to the student health centers. We ask them about the contraceptive availability, whether it's free or what the cost is, both male and female contraceptives, HIV and STI testing. In some places, decreasingly so, but you have to go off campus to, say, the county health facility to get tested. It's an expense, takes time, and more often these days we're finding it available free of charge at the student health center. We're also looking at the lecture and outreach programs that they have, student peer groups where students talking to students about sexual health issues. We're looking at the information, resources, and services for sexual assault. And basically, a lot of information is being provided to students about permission, mutual respect and permission from each other to make sure that boundaries aren't being violated. We don't get heavily into that. That's a whole other category, but we're making sure that information is provided to students and that there's like a 1-800 number that goes to the campus police, instead of, say, the local police, so that they can respond much more quickly. We look at the hours of operation for the student health center and whether they allow drop-ins or require appointments. And then we look at the overall website that's provided to students, because students get a lot of information from the Internet. And if it's available from the student health center website and providing this sexual health information, they rank higher in our scores.
You kind of hope that the students have this information, they're armed with it by the time they get to college. But colleges these days, it seems, they also have a vested interest in making sure that kids have this information, too. Are both of those things driving the increase in the awareness that you're seeing?
That's a tough one to say, Steve. It's what is driving it? I think that colleges are doing an increasingly better job of realizing that students are going through a lot of growing up at college, and it's not just teaching them about preparing for a career, but preparing for adulthood. And they're doing a better job all the time of realizing that this is a critically important time for the students. There's a lot of confusion, a lot of changes going on, a lot of emotions, and they want to help the students navigate that in a healthy and respectful manner.
So the schools that are doing a good job, I think, need to be congratulated. But those schools that are not, what could they be doing better?
They can provide more information to the students. The students are smart. I think maybe increasingly so these days, that they are more aware, thanks to the internet, of course. That doesn't mean just because you have information doesn't mean that you're particularly wise. And that's why things like the peer groups where students are talking to students, getting an idea of what's normal. You know, there's a lot of information out there, and maybe sometimes that information is actually a misperception or a misconception. So I think that they're doing an increasingly better job of trying to help the students.
This is the 11th year, you said, for this report. Give us a sense of what it was like 11 years ago. What, if you could compare and contrast the two from then and now, how would they be different?
That's a really good question. What we've noticed, Steve, is the schools have uniformly gotten much better. In other words, the differences between the top and the bottom are much less. We'd like to think that the publicity from the rankings, and it appears in the student newspapers, and the schools are much more aware of how they rank. So what we found 11 years ago is that there were a few schools doing a really good job, and those stood out. Our job is much harder now because all the schools uniformly are doing better. So earlier, we wouldn't see the number of schools providing this kind of information and recognition of various sexual health type of matters. But now we do. So our job is harder, and we're actually happy that it is.
Is this a decision, should these rankings have any impact on whether or not a student attends one of these schools?
I think that there are many more factors on where you would want to go to school. One thing that I think that we've seen, and we're very sort of humbled by this, but students are taking our ranking and going to the administration and say, look, we should be doing better. There's no reason for us to do as poorly as we are. So this has sort of enabled them to make a change to their school. I guess I would advise if my son or daughter were picking out a school, I wouldn't make a choice based solely on this. But it does sort of give an idea of what the climate's like, and they can make a really positive change armed with this kind of information and talking to the administration or the student health center and saying, this is what they're doing at other places. Why not us?
And you bring up a good point there. Sometimes these schools have really strong rivalries, and that seems to be helping with this area, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. What we've seen in the student health centers is they really are looking forward to this every year to have the chance to show us how they're doing. Because really, it's the only independent kind of assessment of how these schools and the student health centers compare to each other. So this is a tool for them to exceed what they've and excel over what they've done last year.
It's always good seeing reports that improve on the sexual health or any health, and we look forward to seeing your report again next year.
Great. Well, thanks for the opportunity to talk to you, Steve.
Bert Sperling with the 2016 Trojan Sexual Health Report Card. Here are the top 10 schools, by the way. Number 1, University of Georgia. Number 2, Oregon State. Number 3, University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. Number 4, University of Oregon. Number 5, University of Texas at Austin. University of Arizona next. University of Connecticut at number 7. Brown University at 8. Stanford at 9. University of Wisconsin-Madison at number 10. Have to go all the way down in the list to find the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. It is ranked number 38 on that list. Further down on the list is Northwestern University. Indiana University, Bloomington is ranked down there lower as well. So we'll post a full link to all of the different rankings of this. Again, the 2016 Trojan Sexual Health Report Card on college campuses around the country.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 552 on the WGN market desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing toward positive open on Wall Street later, up 24 right now. S&P and NASDAQ futures higher as well. A couple of earnings reports out. We'll tell you about those in just a minute. But first, let's get the latest on commodities in agriculture. Good morning to Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Looking at those weekly harvest progress reports issued yesterday afternoon by the Department of Agriculture, corn and soybean farmers in the Midwest generally like to have the combines cleaned and parked in the garage by Thanksgiving. Well, it looks like some of them will get that done before Halloween this year. Corn harvest percentage, 61% complete as of Sunday, and that's pretty much on the five-year average. But Illinois' corn harvest, 83%, Indiana, 64%, Iowa, 52%. Soybean harvest, Illinois, 76%, Indiana, 71%, Iowa, 77%, and nationally, 76% of the soybean acres harvested. That's right on target with the five-year average. Turning to the grain market yesterday, more strength in soybeans again, basically because of vegetable oil gains in Southeast Asia. A two-month high for beans yesterday. Wheat fell more than 2%. Corn futures were down by 1% in yesterday's trade. And as far as livestock, how about this? 3 days in a row now that we've seen live cattle futures move higher, and yesterday hit a three-week high, and that's the highest level in 3 weeks, thanks to strong cash cattle prices on Friday and the cattle on feed report on Friday that some traders said was friendly. Others said it was bullish. Looks like another pretty good harvest day. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a good day as well. Here is the outlook from the Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Tuesday. It's October 25th. Not much in the way of big stuff today, but we do have a couple of things that we'll be following that could drive the markets as we move forward. The Standard & Poor's releases S&P Case-Shiller Index of Home Prices for August. The Conference Board releases its Consumer Confidence Index. Earnings reports coming out today include Merck, Illinois-based Caterpillar, General Motors. All report results before the market opens. We'll get a few of those here momentarily. Also, Chipotle will report quarterly financial results after the market closes. Also today, the World Bank publishes its annual Doing Business Global report, comparing and ranking the ease of doing business in countries around the world. Singapore headed the 2015 list, followed by New Zealand and Denmark. The U.S. was seventh. Climate and Company CDP launches its Global Climate Change report today, assessing the impact of around 2,000 of the world's largest listed companies on climate change and how they are responding to climate change. Again, all of those things on the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, October 25th, and we will continue to follow those throughout the day on 720 WGN.